PC. Perpetually complicated, profusely corded, physically conspicuous, particularly costly. Oh, and then there's the new iMac, which is about as un-PC as you can get.
Plus Minute Apple Conversation, you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Arifin Elijah. Joining me today, you know him as the jovial founder of Cult of Mac, but San Francisco PD knows him as inmate LK800154, a public menace and instigator of Stella-fueled bar brawls countywide. Leander Caney is here.
Hello, Arifin.
They still make you wear that placard when you go in for your late Friday night drunk jail sessions. That's like, they can take your picture.
Oh, you mean like that? I've got one of those special ankle braces that goes off, you know, when I walk into the pub. It sets off like all the lights go red. And
yeah, and the police know. So they got on a geofence.
Yeah.
That's smart. They probably save a fortune in fees just searching the city for you. Well, we got a lot to talk about this week. We got WWDC next week. We got to talk about these new MacBook Pros, these 8-core MacBook Pros. We got a lot of benchmarks. There's a lot of things I love about these machines, but there's some stuff I think is worth highlighting that I don't love about these machines. And I just wanted to put it out there and let you all know the pros and the cons. And we're going to wrap up with a really great story that I had never heard before that I just ran across this week, about why Steve Jobs didn't want the funniest Get a Mac ads to actually air. And in fact, they did not air. So we'll talk about why that happened and why there's a whole treasure trove of really hilarious Get a Mac ads out there that never got to be aired on television. Unfortunately, because those were my favorite Apple ads of all time. You might be wondering where Lewis Wallace is. He's coming back today, right, Leander?
I don't know. I don't know what his travel plans are.
Really?
No. Why? I'm not a travel agent.
Does he work there?
I get,
when is he coming back to work?
Well, that I don't know either.
Oh, okay.
I know I thought it was going to be this weekend, but let's see.
I think he's coming back today, but he said he was going to be back late or he's going to be totally out of it since he's coming back from the UK. And so I said, hey, man, don't even worry about it. You don't have to come on the Cultcast and, you know, you haven't been following the news for 2 weeks. You're going to come on. You're going to be mumbling incoherently because you're going to be so tired. Just take the day off. Come back next week when you're nice and fresh. And he said, you got it, dude. So we'll be back with Lewis next week. If you're wondering where Buster is, well, I was just telling Leander Caney, the last I heard, he was wandering through the desert in a homemade loincloth, I assume made from leather. And he's just out there somewhere. He might be back eventually. We're not sure yet. When he has internet, he'll probably reach out to us. Maybe he'll send us a nice handwritten letter. I hear that's how he's communicating.
I think smoke signals and stuff like that, right?
I did see some smoke on the horizon. I wonder if that was Buster trying to communicate that he wanted to be on the show
today.
Trying
to log in, yeah.
This login isn't working. I think I forgot my password.
Well, it's all that peyote he's been eating. It's messing with his mind.
Yeah, if you eat too much peyote, that's what happens. You end up wandering half-nude through the desert in a homemade loincloth. He didn't even buy one. He made it himself. That's probably from cactus leaves or something. Do cactuses have leaves? I don't even think that.
I think you strip the bark or something from them, can't you?
Yeah, maybe. Sure. Why not? All right. Well, before we dive into this week's news, of which there is a lot of stuff to talk about, as I mentioned, let me go ahead and say thank you to... This happens every week, doesn't it? Thank you to the Hackable Podcast for supporting this episode. From high-profile data breaches to insidious ransomware, cybercrime has been all over the news and even on TV shows like Black Mirror. You may be wondering, how concerned should I be about my personal devices and data? Am I a couple of keystrokes away from losing my identity? Can a hacker find the most embarrassing secrets hidden on my phone? Oh, dear Lord, I hope not. Hackable, an original podcast from McAfee, answers these questions and more. It's like Mr. Robot meets Mythbusters and can be found on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts. In each episode, Hackable host Jeff Siskin invites a white hat hacker to try and hack a device he's using. They've tested everything from laptops to webcams to drones, virtual reality headsets, and smart plugs. In the latest episode of season 4, Jeff and team investigate how to secure their smartphones. Check out Hackable today on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. You can just search Hackable on your favorite podcast app of choice. That's the Hackable podcast. Oh, well, we got to start with this. WWDC. The keynote is Monday, June 3rd at 10 a.m. What is that? A mere Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 4 days away from now. A mere 4 days away from now. And I got to say, I'm pretty gosh darn excited. How about you, Leander?
I'm super excited. I can't sleep.
You can't? You haven't slept in days?
I haven't slept in days, no.
Oh my gosh. Well, I thought that was more because of that wild party that you were telling me about from that movie premiere that you went to.
Right. I'm mixing it up.
Yeah, well, I'm excited too because we're going to see a bunch of software. And we already talked about all the software that we're expecting. So if you want to check out episode 387 and 389, I think we talked about WWDC in both of those episodes. But I want to mention a Mac Pro conspiracy theory that I saw come across my desk today. So I had a listener reach out to me on Twitter, Johnny Lewis. Shout out to listener Johnny Lewis, who reached out to me on Twitter, and he said FCP.co is going to be at the keynote event. And I was like, FCP.co? I don't know who that is.
Is that one of the Star Wars robots?
What's that?
So it sounds like one of the Star Wars robots.
FCP.3? Yeah, that might be him. He's like, get that robot out of here. We can't hear. So FCP, FinalCutPro.co.
Oh, okay.
I did some research here because I'd never heard of them. And they are a pretty niche website. They have about 10,000 followers on Twitter, and they have been invited to the Apple keynote events. And Johnny Lewis was saying, well, if they've been invited, we're probably going to see something with the Mac Pro. And I was like, you know, that seems like a stretch. But I did check it out, and I got to thinking, this guy might be onto something. So why would a small Final Cut Pro-focused establishment be invited to the keynotes? They only have like 10,000 followers on Twitter, so they're not huge, but they're speaking directly to people who are really passionate about Final Cut Pro. So if Apple is inviting them, and they haven't been invited before, it seems probable that Apple wants this establishment to communicate whatever is being announced at this keynote event to their, you know, specific audience. So at the very least, you would think we're going to get a Final Cut Pro update. And Final Cut Pro 10 was released in 2011. So it's been a long time since they have done a really major revamp of the software, right? We've had lots of smaller updates and stuff. But what are pros interested in? Powerful Macs, the Mac Pro.
Well,
I think this is evidence that we're going to see Apple at least show us something having to do with Final Cut Pro. But I think it's more likely that we're going to see the Mac Pro debut at WWDC 2019. Final Cut Pro works great. I think it's more likely that Apple is planning a Mac Pro unveil than a Final Cut Pro update, like Final Cut Pro 11 or something. I don't think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see the new Mac Pro. What do you think about that, Leander Caney?
Because they invited this niche website that covers Final Cut Pro.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a stretch, not really strong evidence, but you know, you could be onto something. You might be right. And of course, this is all wishful thinking, right? So,
yeah. Well, it is a little bit of wishful thinking. I think you're right about that.
Everyone wants to see. I mean, it would be this is the time and place to show it, isn't it? Really, at WWDC. Because I mean, when do they announce the new machine, the Mac Pro? They're working on it. I mean, like 2 years ago, and
I think it was 2 years ago in November, maybe.
And when was the what was the last update? But there hasn't been anything, has there?
For the Mac Pro?
Yeah,
I think 2013.
I'm sorry, you know, like any update on the you know, have they actually talked about? They haven't talked about it since saying that they were going to be working on it, right?
So, oh, you mean talked about the updated Mac Pro?
Yeah.
No, we haven't heard a single peep.
Right.
So this would be a great time to do it.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, they've got the pro audience, the developer audience there.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's another great point. They've got the developer audience there. They got they got the hardcore fans all sitting there captivated, ready to see what Tim Cook's going to announce.
Right, and everyone loves to see a bit of hardware at WWDC, don't they?
Oh, so. They do, especially if it's the One More Thing. Ooh, baby! That would be pretty exciting, because we know that Apple's got something up their sleeve, and we don't know when it's going to come out, but is this surefire evidence? No, but it is some smoke. It is some smoke. Why would they invite this organization, this outfit that they haven't invited in all the previous years past to this specific event? Seems like there would be a purpose.
How did you tweet they were going? They announced it on Twitter or the blog or something?
They announced it on their blog and on Twitter, yeah. And then they also talked about how they thought that this meant that there was going to be a Mac Pro announcement.
Yeah,
but
got it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how accurate they are or anything like that, so I can't vouch for them personally, but I just think that the fact they were invited at all is very interesting. I mean, it's a Final Cut Pro blog. That's about as specific as you can get as far as Apple media is concerned, right?
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. I have hope now that we're going to see a One More Thing Mac Pro, or maybe not a One More Thing. Maybe it's going to be one of the main elements of the presentation. So we'll keep a lookout for that, of course, and we'll be at full mast at such time that such a device is announced. Okay, let's talk about the MacBook Pro, the 8-core MacBook Pro. Does anyone care about this? Is this interesting to you at all, Leander?
To me?
I feel like I'm the only one that wants to talk about the 8-core MacBook Pro.
I think
this is a pretty interesting machine.
When I saw it in the notes, but
yeah.
No, I mean, it's definitely, you know, I mean, they surprised and announced it this week, so
yeah,
we need to talk, you know, it would be good to talk about it. And you're definitely, like, when expert, you'd love to dig into this stuff and you really, like, geek out on all the details. I mean, I got to admit, I only have a top line knowledge of the thing, the machine, and I haven't really dug into it. So I'm interested to see what you think about it, yeah.
Okay, good. So I give you permission to space out, but just throw me a every once in a while here, okay?
All right, I got my soundboard here.
For the next 5 minutes, that's all I would expect from you.
Okay,
Perfect, thank you. I released a video on my YouTube channel this week about the new MacBook Pro and how I thought that the 8-core upgrade was exciting but also underwhelming. And I think maybe I trended more towards underwhelming, more than I would have liked to. So this is going to be somewhat of a correction and maybe a more well-rounded opinion about the new MacBook Pro. I definitely want the new machine, but I'm going to hold off. I'm actually holding off for the rumored 16-inch MacBook Pro, and once I get done with this little segment, you'll see why. I'm going to make my case on why I think it's probably better to wait, at least for me, and I think for many people, the better option is going to be to wait. Here's why. So let's start with this. The new top-tier MacBook Pro. You probably already know this. Let me just summarize. It includes Intel's 9th generation Core i9 processor, which just debuted, and I want to tip my hat and give a round of applause to Apple for including hardware updates more frequently in their MacBook Pros. That's what pros want. We want the newest hardware going into the Macs as soon as possible, right? So that we can have access to the best hardware. It's clocked at 2.4 gigahertz with a turbo boost up to 5 gigahertz. This is the first 8-core laptop that Apple has ever released, and it promises a 40% performance increase over the 6-core MacBook Pro. So that's significant. The 6-core MacBook Pro was a significant increase in power over the 4-core MacBook Pro. And now we have an extra, according to Apple, 40% extra performance, depending on the application. So there have been some Geekbench benchmark scores that are coming out that confirm that, indeed, the 8-core MacBook Pro is about 30% faster in certain tests than the 6-core MacBook Pro. So that's a big improvement, right? One of the biggest improvements that we've seen in MacBook Pros in a long time. The multi-core score for the 8-core MacBook Pro is about 29,200, which is, it tops the 6-core MacBook Pro by 29%, which that computer topped out at about 22,600 in Geekbench scores, okay? In the single-core score, the 8-core scored around 5,900, whereas the 6-core scored around 5,350. So that's a 10% improvement in single-core scores, right? So we're all good so far. I'm very happy so far. One YouTuber reported that the new MacBook Pro is beating his base iMac in some of the tests that he's been running. So now we're looking real nice. I mean, you're talking about being a base iMac Pro in some tests. with a MacBook Pro, that's pretty incredible because that's a beefy machine. Here's where I'm about to deflate your whoopee cushion just a little bit. Not a lot. I'm not going to go. I'm just going to go just a little bit, okay? The 8-core performance from the MacBook Pro is still somewhat disappointing, in my opinion, because this specific machine, like the 2018, it has thermal performance issues. This current body of the MacBook Pro, it just cannot keep these chips as cool as they would need to be in order for the chips to run at their maximum performance. And this is evidenced by the fact that Windows PCs are also using this same 8-core CPU that is in the new 2019 MacBook Pro. And these CPUs are able to perform much better in the PCs than they are in the Mac. Why? It's because the MacBook Pro is unable to keep the chip as cool as it needs to be. And Apple has also tuned the MacBook Pro to seek silence over performance. So if you are doing something where the chip is being pushed and could push itself harder if the fan's turned on, the MacBook Pro is going to keep the chip clocked downward, so with a lower clock speed, reducing the performance, so that your fans won't come on. So it is giving you silence, quietness over performance, which is another opinionated engineering move that I perhaps would not have made. I would have at least given users a sport mode or something like they have in some sports cars, you know, where you can activate it so that you can drive on the street and you don't have to worry about peeling out, but you know, you flip the switch, all the gears turn to red and the thing starts breathing fire. That would have been what I would have preferred. So I think the MacBook Pro is a great machine for pretty much everybody, but if you're doing prolonged encoding, if you're compiling for a long time, if you're a scientist and you're doing some sort of complicated long form calculation like fluid dynamics, this chip isn't going to perform as well for you as it would if someone were using the same chip in a PC. And I think that's disappointing. And I summed it up this way in my video. It's as though Apple put a Ferrari engine in this MacBook Pro, but is cooling it with the radiator of a mid-90s Ford Taurus. It just can't live up to its potential because it can't cool itself. And that is disappointing, in my opinion, and is something that I think that Apple is going to try to resolve in the 2000 or in the 16-inch MacBook Pro that is rumored to be in the works and probably going to be released in 2020, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. Apple is stuck with this super thin body, and it is affecting the performance of the CPU and other components in the computer because they just can't pipe the heat out fast enough. And of course, the other big problem with these really super thin laptops is Apple had to re-engineer an entire new keyboard to fit inside of this machine, hence the butterfly keyboard. And here we are on the fourth gen. This keyboard has been updated with a new keyboard condom underneath the keys. It used to be made of silicone. Now iFixit is saying it's made from nylon, and they have also changed the material that is used inside of the actual keyboard switch mechanism. So Apple has thrown a couple fixes at this new fourth generation butterfly keyboard. And if you watch the iFixit analysis, they were asking these scientists why Apple would have changed these materials. And the engineer was saying, it seems like, now I'm paraphrasing here, this is my understanding of what he said. It seems like Apple isn't quite sure what the problem is, but they are trying to resolve as many issues as they can think of. So they put in this new keyboard cap condom made of a new material, and they also changed the material of the actual keyboard switch in an effort to reduce or maybe even eliminate the problems that they have been having with this specific keyboard. Will it work? We don't know yet. It doesn't seem like the new keyboards are that drastically different than the 2018 keyboards. They look exactly the same. It's just a slight difference in materials.
Didn't we get data from a genius saying that the 2008 keyboards were getting less repairs than the previous two generations?
Yes, I did have a guy reach out to me. I wasn't able to corroborate his employment with Apple, but he seemed pretty straightforward and he seemed believable to me. But, you know, you got to do your due diligence here. He did say that he had worked for Apple in a genius type position, and he got to see a lot of these repairs go in and out, and that for the most part, the keyboard cap condom significantly reduced any issues that they were seeing over the 2016-2017 keyboard. So it does seem like it had a pretty significant impact, at least in his opinion. So maybe this will reduce it even more. There's no way to know, it is interesting.
I know everyone loses their mind over this issue, and because personally I haven't been affected by it, I'm skeptical, right, that it's as big a problem as a lot of commentators seem to say it is, mm-hmm. And Apple, I tend to say Apple's, their statement about it, which is that it affects a small number of customers, on face value. I just take that, it's a bit naive of me maybe to believe that, but
I think the truth is probably somewhere more in the middle. It's not as bad as it's hyped up to be, but it's not as rare,
right.
As Apple says that
right.
it is. I think it's probably somewhere
but
in the middle.
I like, the reason I like Apple is because they experiment. They do things like getting rid of headphone jacks and getting rid of floppy drives and adopting USB and doing things like face ID. Right? I mean, a lot of almost always. Their experimentation is successful. It's very rare that they have an experiment that goes wrong like this. But I think, and this is why I'm sort of willing to give them a bit more leeway, because I like the fact that the company experiments. They don't play it safe. They always try to push it the state of the art forward. And, a lot of people lose their minds with, Apple changing the materials and are sticking with this design, this keyboard design, and not going back to the old design. But, I don't think that's just not in Apple's DNA, is it? They're not going to revert back to this old design, even though it would keep, some commentators happy. Some pundits, would be happy with that. I like the fact that they are trying to come up with a new, thinner keyboard design. And, it's unfortunate that they've had to tweak it. And if you're someone like, what's the name of that... there's one, I can't remember her name now. There's a woman writer who lives in New York, and she's had one problem after another. She's bought three or four machines, MacBook Pros, and each one the keys have gone wrong, and it's driven her crazy.
Really? Yeah. See, I feel like if it's going to affect you, you're going to be someone who uses the keyboard a lot to type. You're going to be a writer. Maybe you'll be a developer.
Right, yeah. And this is
your
main machine.
I don't use the keys that often. Yeah.
And she put it in for a week, and it came back fixed and all that kind of stuff. So she had to lose the machine for a week. Every uh-huh. problem you can possibly have with the keyboards and with Apple's repair process, she's had. It's been very, very unfortunate. But I like the fact that they're doing this. They're trying to improve the keyboard. And there's a big debate as well about whether people actually like it, like the feel of the keys. I personally like it. I like the fact that the machine is very, very thin, some of that has to do with the keyboard, with slimming down the keyboard. And I think it's unfortunate that some people are having problems with it over and over again. But I think it's in Apple's DNA to do this kind of thing and to keep experimenting and try and keep tweaking it. And I have a lot of confidence they'll get there. Maybe this is the fix that they've been looking for.
I also applaud the experimentation, and I also like the thinness a lot. I would much rather have a thin laptop than a thick, fat laptop.
Right.
But the question for me is not do I like thin. Would I rather have thin than a machine that could perform much better? So if you ask a pro, would you rather have a CPU that could run or... Let me rephrase it. Would you rather have a thin laptop or would you rather have a laptop that's 20% more powerful? I think most pros are going to say that they want the power over the thinness, as long as you're not making it a brick. I'm not talking about making it 2 inches thick. I think that Apple could probably increase the thickness, a fourth of an inch, maybe less, maybe an eighth of an inch, and have significant cooling improvements enough so that they can run the CPU inside this machine at its full potential. That would be a worthy trade-off, in my opinion. Necessarily need to have.
I mean, can't you make a direct comparison? I mean, how thick are the PCs that you were talking about? I was just looking at one of the an Alienware. They released some new gaming PC, I think, this week, uh-huh. And it is 2 inches thick. It's 2 inches thick at the back, and it's got these giant fans. I mean, it looks like the back of some conference center, in Arizona, where they put the air conditioners on full blast, you know, blasting out hot air. There's always going to be these trade-offs, aren't there? And you know, what?
But that scenario is what people always bring up, and that is the extreme scenario. That specific machine is probably optimized for overclocking. It probably has an insanely powerful GPU built in, one that's way more powerful and gets hotter than the one in the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, right.
So that's on the other end of the spectrum. I would be more happy in the middle. Give me a computer that's slightly thicker and allows the CPU to run at its full potential most of the time, not one that can barely run at its base clock speed. Now, I should add, okay, the 2018 model had problems with the i9 being able to maintain its clock speed, its base clock speed, okay? From everything I've seen, the 2019 model actually doesn't have that issue, and it is actually able to run at speeds that are higher than its base clock for prolonged periods of time. Now, that's a great thing. I'm really happy to see that. But it's not, the clock speed isn't as high as it is in PCs. It would be able to run at a much higher performance if there was a better way to cool the chip inside the MacBook Pro. So I'm always looking for the best performance. I feel like that is what pros want from their MacBook Pro. But of course, this leads us into the conversation that we always end up in.
Right.
Who's a pro?
Yeah, what's a pro?
Right? Yeah, right. Is somebody working in Photoshop an hour a day a pro? Is a writer a pro? So I'm looking at it from a video editor's perspective. So I'm someone who's really pushing.
That's the most, you know, intensive.
Exactly. Which is why I'm like, okay, give me a sport mode at least in the settings, in the system preferences. Let me turn on the sport mode that makes the fans more active. So as soon as the CPU starts heating up, you're going to give me better performance because you're going to start ramping up the fans immediately. I would be a little bit more satiated with that specific scenario as opposed to Apple just saying, we're going to optimize for quietness. If you want performance, go work in the beer fridge at Costco, which actually, come to think of it, is not a bad idea. Hey, Gav, go work at the cooler at your local pub. Yeah, exactly. So for all these reasons, I'm waiting for the rumored 16-inch MacBook Pro. I think that
Well, it just gave me an idea for a product. Why doesn't someone make a chill pad, you know, that you can put your machine on it's like an ice pack. Maybe you could put it on an ice pack, you know, that would cool it down.
There you go. That's the next product for the Cult of Mac store.
Store, right. Okay, I'm going to get working on it.
It's a chill pad. Exactly. It's like a big gelatinous pad that you set your laptop on. Man, my 2018 MacBook Pro, it gets so hot sometimes I can't even put it on my lap because it will burn your kibbles and bits.
Yeah,
it's dangerous if you're trying to be infertile. May not be a bad idea.
We should have done.
Maybe some people need to be infertile. Yeah, you know, that sounded really bad. We were talking about childbirth prevention. I don't even want to go into this.
Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We were talking about
you might as well reach
a point in your life.
Now you confuse everyone.
I'll just say this. We're talking about a point where you've reached a point where you're like, I've had enough kids. How do I prevent having any more kids? You know, there's certain procedures that you can go through as a man that really aren't the most pleasant procedures, but are the most surefire way to prevent future pregnancies if I'm not being clear enough. And, you know, I heard that if you have too much heat in that general zone, it actually makes you infertile. So I might be starting to work with my laptop on my lap more often. Okay, let's see here. Jeez.
I'm sure people are going to be like wondering about this. Like, what? Oops, sorry, hold on.
What is going on over there? Did you turn your phone on vibrate this week, by the way?
I actually did, yes. Yes, I did. Yeah. Yep, I did.
Okay. Okay, let me see here. I want to talk about why I'm waiting for the rumored 16-inch MacBook Pro. But before I do that, let me give a quick thanks to Netgear for supporting this episode. The future of Wi-Fi is here. It's time to welcome
Is this
Wi-Fi
a town crier?
6.
Are you a town crier?
I was trying to do I've been watching a lot of the Thor movies, and I got caught up in the moments. The future of Wi-Fi is here, Leander. It's time to embrace Wi-Fi 6. Don't be such a Luddite. The Netgear Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 router gives you ultra-fast speeds and wider coverage throughout your home. It's the biggest revolution of Wi-Fi ever. You get 4 times the capacity compared to today's Wi-Fi, which means you can connect more devices and stream simultaneously without impacting Wi-Fi speed and reliability. The devices of today and tomorrow, they demand more. Your old Wi-Fi is timing out, and you need the latest in high-performance Wi-Fi that can keep up with you and your entire family. If you stream your shows on services like Netflix or Hulu, the newest line of high-performance routers from Netgear will eliminate buffering and let you stream smoothly, even in 4K. It's like giving your Wi-Fi the streaming VIP treatment. If you game online, lag will be a thing of the past. Churn your Wi-Fi all the way up to 6! Man, I wish Lewis was here to do his rock scream, because he does one so much better than me. Churn it up to 6! With a Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 router.
I think my cat can do better than that.
Okay. Here, hold on. I'll give you an opportunity to give me one. Check it out today at netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. You left me hanging. Where's my 6?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was like, you want
give me a 6. Give me a rock 6.
6!
That's pretty good.
That was more like a strangled scream.
That sounded like a dying ostrich, actually. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi and the number 6. How's that?
That's okay.
Wi-Fi 6.
It's okay. For good one. Oh, man.
I know. Lewis can really get high.
Well,
he's
a genuine rock star.
I know. He's had practice. It's clear. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. Yeah. So the 16-inch rumored MacBook Pro. This is just speculation, but I have a feeling that first and foremost, we're going to see Apple address these cooling issues. Look how serious they are about giving the MacBook Pro regular hardware updates. They're getting serious about their pro market, I think. And I think the regular updates are proof of that. So for that reason, I think that we're going to see much better cooling in the new generation of MacBook Pro coming out in 2020, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. Will Apple address the keyboard? I think that they might. I don't know. We've talked about in the past how it seems like Apple is committed to this butterfly keyboard and may just keep tweaking it to make it better. But if you're designing a whole new MacBook Pro, your thinness constraints aren't there. You can change the keyboard in ways that you can't change it with the current generation of MacBook Pro. And Apple clearly wants to dial out this keyboard issue. They're getting raked over the coals for it. They have a really bad perception issue right now. People know there are keyboard issues. And they're having to spend all this time and money to replace all these different keyboards for people. I think they want to squash this problem. So I think that's another reason to wait. I also think we're going to see the introduction of Face ID in the next generation of MacBook Pro. The current generation is one of the last products. In fact, I think it's the last product that has Touch ID included. Apple is moving to Face ID on all their other gadgets. You know it's only a matter of time before they do this on the MacBook Pro. If this 16-inch MacBook Pro is going to be special, if it's going to be aimed at pros, if it's going to be more powerful, if it's going to be all the things that we think it's going to be, I think Face ID is a sure thing. Okay. The one last thing, and this is a wild card. I'm hoping for it. I have no reason to believe that they're going to include this in the MacBook Pro, but a HDR display with narrower bezels. We know that narrower, I can't even say this. We know that narrow bezels are coming because Ming-Chi Kuo said they are. So that is a likelihood. But we also know that Apple is working on an HDR external display. And the next move in displays on iMacs, on the MacBook Pro, I think is going to be HDR. And I'm very excited about that. HDR looks much better than the current generation of displays. So for all those reasons, I think for me, I'm going to wait till next year. I'm really happy with my 6-core MacBook Pro. Would I benefit from the extra performance of the 8-core? I definitely would, but practically the only change Apple made was adding an extra 2 cores to this generation of MacBook Pro. I heard the screen is nicer too, but it's not significantly better. So for me, it doesn't really make sense to, if you have a 2018, to go and purchase a 2019 just to get the 2 extra cores. Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent. What do you think about that, Leander?
I think you're probably right.
Next generation is going to be the way to go. And if you're waiting for a MacBook Pro, I know a lot of you out there are waiting with your earlier models, your 2012s, 13s, 14s, 15s, you wild animals. Some of you go back to 2008. And I know that many of you are waiting for this generation of MacBook Pro to be retired, and you're ready for Apple to move on. I think next year's model is going to be the one to go for. So that's the one I'm waiting for. Did I convince you to wait too?
What's the timeline? Remind me the timeline of moving to ARM chips.
It could happen on the next generation of MacBook Pro. It really could. We don't know exactly when they're going to do it, but if Apple is releasing a completely redesigned MacBook Pro in 2020, I think that's a real possibility. I prefer to stick with the one from Intel, but I'm not sold on ARM. I'm really not. You know, I remember the transition from PowerPC chips to Intel. It was clumsy.
I know about that. It was pretty seamless.
Well, if you weren't using apps that demanded full power from the hardware that you were purchasing, then it was probably fine. But if you're using something that really demands a lot from your hardware, there was a translation layer that they had introduced. I think it was called Rosetta, wasn't it? I believe that's what it was called. And it would allow PowerPC apps to run on the Intel hardware, and they took a performance hit. Right, so for me, you know, I'm all about that performance.
But that was the transitionary period, right? You know, until developers got the native code going, and they built all that into. They had really good support, didn't they, for developers, and it didn't take very long. The transition was actually pretty quick, wasn't it?
I felt like it took at least 6 months.
That's not very long.
I don't remember. It was forever ago. Yeah. It was forever ago. But of course, Apple will move all their apps over right away, which will be great because I primarily use Apple apps. But if you're in the Adobe ecosystem, there's a lot of apps that are out there that aren't going to get moved over right away. I mean, let's say you use DaVinci Resolve, which is a really popular app for editing. Actually, it's outstanding. If you guys haven't checked out DaVinci Resolve, especially version 16, wow. If you edit in Final Cut Pro or you're thinking about Final Cut Pro, DaVinci's Resolve is free, and it's catching up to Final Cut Pro. In fact, they're copying some of Final Cut Pro's best features. Anyway, I digress. But an app like that, it's not going to get support for, I would guess, 3 to 6 months. And if you're using that application day in, day out, you don't want to take a performance hit. So I don't know. I'm waiting to see what they do with ARM. I like being in the Intel world. And I'm not totally sold on.
Yeah,
yet,
there's a lot. Of, you know, there's a lot of criticism about Intel. They're not really, you know, the Moore's law is running out of steam, and Intel's really not, keeping up, and producing really good and compelling updates to the chips. You know, it's slowing down the speed performance.
Yeah.
Then look at what Apple's doing. You know, on mobile. I mean, their mobile chips are as good as some desktop chips now. Faster than some desktop chips. And they just seem to be going from strength to strength.
I have no doubt that Apple could create a compelling chip in the MacBook Pro, but the Intel stuff's pretty good recently. There are 6-core chips, there are 8-core chips. I would agree with you that it took Intel quite a while to, for some reason, start putting out chips that actually had compelling performance again. We were stuck on the 4-core chips forever with these really moderate upgrades every year. But now all of a sudden, here we are. We got a 6-core chip. Now we got an 8-core chip for the mobile market. We're doing pretty good now. The chips that they have out now are, I mean, you have a MacBook Pro that's practically the same in some benchmarks as a iMac Pro. That's crazy. That's a slim, slender MacBook Pro performing the same as a desktop production machine. Yeah, that's crazy.
That is pretty amazing, isn't it?
You know? So anyway, let's wrap up with this great story. Did you read this? Steve Jobs didn't want the Get a Mac ads to be too funny.
Yeah, pretty funny.
This was a great story and one that I had never heard. So let's wrap up. Let's wrap up with this. Justin Long was recently on a episode of People Magazine's TV show called Couch Surfing. I had to Google this. I didn't even know People Magazine was still around. And I definitely didn't know they had a TV show. No. And Justin Long, who played the character of the Mac, you'll probably remember, was on their TV show. And they started talking about all these Get a Mac ads that never aired. So I've probably watched more Mac ads, Apple ads, than virtually anyone else, because I put them in the introduction of virtually all of our shows. And you would not believe how much Apple advertisements are out there floating around. And I've seen just about all of them. But there are only about 66 of the Get a Mac ads. And I found out reading this interview, there's actually over 300 ads. They filmed 300 and they only aired 66 of them. But according to Justin Long, Steve Jobs decided to keep the best ads off the air because they were too funny. So the best ones, the funniest ones, never actually made it to air. And he went on to say, quote, in one in particular, I remember Zach Galifianakis played a drunken Santa Claus and I was dying to see this one. Long said on the episode, okay, he also went on to say, basically Steve Jobs preferred when they weren't super funny because he thought they would detract from the point of the commercial. He thought if people were too focused on the humor, they would lose sight of the product.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I was thinking about this and I'm sort of wondering, I mean, maybe he's right, but I would have thought if it was really funny, it would be memorable. And that's the whole point, really, isn't it? You know, I mean, maybe they would. I don't know. You know, he knows. For sure, Steve Jobs knows a lot more about advertising than I do. But I don't know. You know, I would have thought that if it's funny, if it's amusing, then you'd remember the ad and you would remember the product. Does it overshadow the product? Does the humor overshadow the product? I don't know.
Well, it's funny. Some of the Apple ads that have been put out, they're very loosely affiliated with the products. There was one that I saw with Will Ferrell, and he was Santa Claus, and he's like, "How many songs can Santa fit on his iPod?" And he was talking about all the music that Santa has on his iPod, and it was really funny, and it didn't really interact with the product in any significant way. It was just affiliated with the product, and it was funny, and like you said, it made you like Apple because it was so entertaining. So I'm kind of with you. I think that they should have released the funniest ones, and that way people would have they would have transference when they watch this ad. They think it's really funny, and they transfer those positive feelings to the product that Apple has affiliated with the advertisement. But, you know, I'm not Ken Siegel. I'm not, like, some ad expert. That's what I would have done. But the crazy part is these Apple ads, they actually worked. Apple experienced a sales increase of 200,000 Macs after the first month of the campaign in May of 2006. By July, Apple had sold 1.3 million units, and at the end of the fiscal year, there was a 39% increase from the previous year's Macs sales. So they were wildly successful. It actually significantly increased Apple's Mac sales.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
I can only hope that one day Apple releases this treasure trove of hidden, funny, hilarious get a Mac ads, but they're probably locked in Tim Cook's office vault, never to be seen.
Yeah, they know they won't resurrect him. Too bad.
Only he sees them. It's a shame
it would be great if they just dumped him on YouTube, wouldn't it?
Yeah, totally. That would be so great.
Yeah, they'd get a big. I'm sure there'd be a lot of attention for that kind of thing.
In fact, I'm going to send Tim Cook an email and suggest just that.
Okay.
I'm serious. I know I always joke about emailing Tim Cook. I'm going to email him and say, please release these ads to the public. We all want to see them.
One thing I noticed as well, you know, like one of the things when people were worried about when Steve Jobs died was, you know, would Apple's advertising suffer because he was so intimately involved in, you know, crafting the messages that they put out. And I think maybe it did for a little bit, you know, but I think recently their ads have been great. There's one that's running right now, you know, Mother Nature. Have you seen that one?
I haven't, no.
It's a fantastic ad. It's all these crazy. It's all shot on iPhone. It's supposed to showcase, you know, the iPhone's photo and video capabilities, and it focuses on wildlife. So it starts off, you know, there's gazelles running across the savannah, and then hippos, and then crocodiles, you know, like trying to snap your face off, and then it goes underwater. There's a couple of sharks fighting, and it says, you know, don't mess with Mother Nature, and it ends up with this lizard that squirts something out of its nose at you, and it's all supposed to be shot on an iPhone. And there's a caveat, you know, that some of this stuff has been sort of enhanced, you know, whatever, because and they use some specialist equipment. But this isn't the kind of stuff that you or I could get. You know, this is like you've got to be a professional diver to get under there with the sharks and stuff. But the footage is incredible, and it's got a heavy metal soundtrack, and it's really beautifully put together. You know, I think there was one of those ads that you just sit in, and I've sat there and rewound it, and then I called all the kids and, hey kids, look at this, because I thought it was so great. You know, the footage and the music, it's just really nice piece of advertising, really well put together.
You know what they're missing though is they're missing the humor. That's the part that I feel those Get a Mac ads had, and ads after those were missing. There's just no humor. They're artistic and they're beautiful, but they're not memorable.
Yeah, the humorous ones.
Yeah. Well, and the Get a Mac ads were really funny, and then of course all the ones with Jeff Goldblum were solid gold.
Yeah, right.
Those might have been the best ads that Apple ever made. The ones with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, with the iMac.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Ooh. Ooh. Oh.
Right, yeah.
Man, he was perfect. I don't know if this is true. Maybe you could tell me. Wasn't Steve Jobs trying to get Jeff Goldblum to be like the official voice of Apple?
I sort of vaguely remember something like that, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think his image as well, like kind of, you know, was very closely aligned with the sort of Apple brand.
Totally. Back then, especially, you look at him and he looked so 90s. Now you look at him, he's mega polished. He never has a hair out of place. He dresses like an artist. I don't know if he got a stylist or something. Back in the 90s, he looked like Jeff Goldblum, you know, mega dad. And now he looks like some fancy actor / artist. He always is wearing these cool clothes cool outfits and cool glasses
looks like
and stuff.
He's in, you know, in character for the Hunger Games or something, doesn't it?
That's right. He does kind of remind you of Caesar Flickerman, doesn't he?
And then before, like you said, he looked more like Brundlefly than Jeff Goldblum. Like he was.
Yeah, he's undergone a huge transition, hasn't he? In the way in his persona and the way he looks and carries himself. Yeah. That's really interesting. I he's also a musician. He does these performances at this LA nightclub. I don't remember what it's called. He plays piano, he sings and stuff. So he's very artistic. But I wonder if he dresses himself in all these cool outfits or if he has a stylist. He probably has a stylist.
I'm sure.
Everyone in Hollywood does.
Yeah, and he's probably getting all those clothes for free, right? Because he's getting photographed in them. And
yeah,
who's
maybe.
Who's he married to?
Yeah. I have no idea. But when you're a man that beautiful, you deserve to get clothes for free.
He's probably got silver wives, yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. If you're that beautiful, you should get clothes for free. How come we're not getting any free clothes? Have you got any free outfits?
No. Oh, I did. Yeah, I got a sweatshirt the other day. A hoodie.
Does it say Comcast on it? Come back to Comcast is your free sweatshirt.
Yeah, well, that is most of my wardrobe is like free t-shirts I picked up at trade shows.
I always love seeing guys out in the wild with a t-shirt that you know you can clearly tell they got for free. It's like, use Biolage shampoo. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up there, Leander. We're running long. Hey, go check out Hackable, the original podcast from McAfee that answers the question, how worried should I really be? Listen and subscribe to Hackable today on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you should also go check out netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. If you have an old, crusty router, if you're still using an airport router, you are going to be truly surprised how incredible this new generation of routers is from Netgear. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Next week is going to be our WWDC 2019 reaction episode. We hope to see you guys there because I think it's going to be a real humdinger. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there, Leander. That's all the cult cats we have for you guys this week. There it is. If you want to reach out to us on Twitter and say hi or talk to us about any stories we mentioned on today's show, I'm at Airfon. Leander is at L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
That's funny, because if you go slightly wrong, then it puts the whole thing off, doesn't it?
It's like playing something on the piano and not starting from the very start, and you can't remember how to press the keys.
I don't know.
You clearly don't
think
about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure, you're right.
Hey, y'all.
Tim, gobble, gobble. What are you doing here? Why don't you start the podcast with that?
Pretty funny. I should.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best 5 seconds of the entire show right there.
The only good
five seconds.
We could
just stop it, yeah. Well, that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week.
Right.